Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey! How we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Mark. Brendan behind the glass. Mark. It is a Wednesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now the Astros have lost back-to-back games in Oakland. Who saw that coming? Nobody. Still a chance to come home with a winning road trip if they win today. Could go 4-2 in the six-game roadie. That'd be fine. Although the Astros lineup today, not the best. First pitch, 3:05 for the Astros today in the getaway game in Oakland with Christian Javier on the mound. Blankers, I was watching that game yesterday. And Yordan Alvarez got intentionally walked. Like, Frankie Montas threw a few pitches, nothing in the zone. Anything in the zone would have been a huge mistake. They eventually walked him with the first base open, runner at second base. And we've talked a lot about Yordan Alvarez being one of the best hitters in all of baseball. And I think I'm just going to call him the best hitter in baseball from now on. I think it's a better way to say that. But you're getting to the point now where everybody else around baseball knows this as well. Like, teams are always quicker to catch up than, like, media people than fans. So teams have known that Yordan's a great hitter. Media types have figured out that Yordan's a great hitter. And then all of the other fans outside of Houston are realizing Yordan Alvarez is the best hitter in baseball. He's going to start getting the Barry Bonds treatment if he doesn't have protection in this lineup.
Absolutely.
Anytime you have a runner in scoring position, Yordan's at the plate. I don't even care if first base is open or not. You rather lose to Yordan Alvarez or Alex Bregman? Would you rather lose to Yordan Alvarez or today, Aledmys Diaz?
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. And the same way Astros fans were talking about not pitching to Aaron Judge when there were big situations with the Yankees as they were taking on the Astros, this is exactly what's going to happen more and more to Yordan Alvarez. And it's deservedly so because of how good and that Yordan is and how much respect he's going to gain if he hasn't already gained it across the league. But that's why you can't afford to just say Dusty's going to Dusty anymore. That's why Dusty can't just be as flippant with his lineup as he is again today, as he's been so many times throughout his tenure with the Astros. And you have to put more thought into where you're putting people around Yordan Alvarez because of the fact it's going to be a factor for you. And if you don't do it properly, it's going to hurt you at some point.
Watching that game, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna stop complaining about lineups. Like, whatever. It's the regular season. You lead the division by 100 games. You're going to be in the playoffs. You're not really going to play meaningful games again, to be honest, until the postseason, like do-or-die games where everything is on the line, or even high-stakes games like the Yankees. The Mariners wanted to make it a high-stakes series against the Astros, so some high stakes there. You're not really going to see a whole lot of that the rest of the season. Sure, there might be a series here against the Braves in interleague that feels a little bit bigger than all of the rest. Sure, you're probably going to make a move after the deadline, and you're going to be excited to see some players coming in. So I got to the point yesterday, early in that game, where I was like, you know, I'm not going to care if Chaz McCormick's in the leadoff spot. Dusty Baker is an old-school manager. He believes in, let me keep everybody else in their normal spot in the batting order so they get comfortable in that batting order like it's a king-size bed that you have to put your body groove in or something like that. So, like, whatever. You can have that Dusty. You can have Aledmys Diaz hit wherever you want him in the lineup. I'm not going to care about the regular season lineups with the one exception that Yordan Alvarez needs to get protection. And I think you can do it in a variety of ways, Blankers. I think one, how about Kyle Tucker in the cleanup spot?
I think Tucker and Bregman surrounding him is your best alternative.
But like, to me, it's not Bregman. To me, it's not Bregman because Bregman doesn't slug.
Same, like, Bregman Tucker, ahead of him and Tucker behind him.
And the protection, I mean, is directly behind him. Yeah. Like, Tucker today, if you haven't seen the lineup, Yordan's hitting third today, and Aledmys Diaz is the cleanup hitter today, and then Kyle Tucker's batting fifth because Dusty Baker's married to the lefty-righty-lefty thing. You can't get over that. But there are certain ways you can get the protection for Yordan Alvarez. If it's internal, if it's what you currently have, I think the answer is Kyle Tucker. I think it's Kyle Tucker hitting directly behind him. Dusty's going to say, oh, back-to-back lefties, you can't do that back in 70-style baseball. That's what Dusty's going to be the pushback. You can also do it via trade. So, like, the most critical thing from a lineup perspective, I'll get over everything else. I'll get over Altuve, Bregman, wherever they're at in the lineup. I'll get over the Chaz McCormick with a rare leadoff start when Altuve's off. I'll get over Yuli Gurriel hitting in the two-hole today. I'll get over all of that. But the one thing Dusty needs to meet me in the middle with is get protection for Yordan Alvarez some way, somehow.
You know, you look at it, and we saw this pretty consistently over the month of June when everybody was really starting to pick it up, was Alvarez and Tucker back-to-back.
Yeah.
And then you can't get around them. And then these guys do damage. And then a lot of times other guys see better pitches. And it just gets the whole lineup going. And I don't – I just will never understand Dusty. And I've had, I haven't gotten to your point yet of having a conversation with myself about it to try and talk myself out of it. But at the same time, every time I think about it, I'm like, what would another manager do? What would another – not even necessarily an analytical manager, but what would another manager do with the amount of talent in this lineup, but with one specific guy that is as good and having as good a year as Alvarez is having in terms of setting up his lineup? So we don't I just can't tell you what I went through last night when I turned on the TV and saw Chaz batting leadoff.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, I don't get this big, long swing in the leadoff position. I don't care what, you know, how hot he's been lately or whatever, you know, statistic you're going to pull out of your rear end to say that this is why.
Well, he's good against lefties.
He has been good against lefties,
but,
right?
Well, no,
but he
must be
facing a lefty. Yeah, because I had heard that stat the night before. The thing to me is it just, it makes zero sense. There's no justifying it. I think he gets off too easily when you just say, well, Dusty's going to Dusty. And you would think a guy as analytical as Click at some point just says, Dusty, come on, man. At a certain point, we are hurting our best hitter's chances of being successful every time he comes up, putting a lineup like that out there.
James Click is a believer in the on-base percentage at the top of the order, and then basically the highest on-base percentage guy, whoever it is, even if it's Jordan Alvarez, he's your leadoff guy. Your second highest on-base percentage guy is second, and then it's all the way down 3-9. That's how Click would put it together. But Click would also tell you that he feels that lineups are overrated. He feels like it doesn't matter a whole lot. It doesn't add a whole lot of runs at the end of the day. So, like, okay, I'll meet you there, too. If you're telling me the lineups are overrated, I understand that point. I understand that the most optimal lineup versus the least optimal lineup is a difference of, like, 10 runs a year. Okay, fine. You've sold me on that. You've convinced me of that. But the one thing that I have to see is Jordan Alvarez get protection. If it's a bat at the deadline, if it's Josh Bell, if it's Wilson Contreras, if it's Trey Mancini, if it's Christian Walker, although I'm not sure Christian Walker is the best protection there, at least more than Kyle Tucker. It could be Kyle Tucker. One other thing, too, how about maybe thinking and tinkering with the idea of moving Jordan Alvarez up in the lineup? Barry Bonds used to never get pitched to. They never moved him from the lineup, and Dusty Baker was part of that. It was a different brand of baseball. It was a different generation of baseball. You point to this all the time. Like, if they're not going to pitch to Jordan Alvarez in critical spots, okay, well, try to figure out the best way to give him the most at-bats possible. If they're not going to pitch to him, okay, how about you lead him off? How about you bat him second? That way he's on base with less than two outs, and you have a better chance to manufacture a run. So for me, protection via trade, Kyle Tucker is your best internal option, or move him up in the lineup.
Yeah, look, you look at this and you look across the league and you say it's not uncommon. As of course, Dusty could do just about anything and everybody would just say, oh, okay, because of the fact that we're so used to and conditioned to him doing just the completely bizarre decisions he makes with his batting lineup every single day. And the excessive rest. This team is so rested, they should do commercials for, like, some kind of mattress company, because every time they get hot, they sit down. Every time you think they're rolling, two or three guys that shouldn't be sitting at the same time are all sitting down. Yet they still have, you know, over 60 wins. They are one of the top three teams in baseball. They keep doing what they're doing. But if you look across the league, Kyle Schwarber bats leadoff. Aaron Judge bats leadoff. All these big bats. When you're worried about getting the best pitches and the most at-bats for your most dominant player, you move them up. It makes perfect sense, and he would be an ideal candidate to be your leadoff guy if Altuve wasn't hitting as good as he's hitting.
Yep.
But you can hit him second. Because,
yep,
you throw first pitch fastball to Altuve, he's going to kill you. So you got to pitch to him, but you got to pitch around him. He gets on, now you got to pitch to Jordan. Jordan can do damage. That is the kind of thing that you want for this team. We've seen what they do when they get out to an early lead. Move him up in the lineup then if you're not going to put Tucker behind him. But the best lineup that you have with the most at-bats for your best hitters, Tucker should be up there too.
See, that's one of the other options as well. Like, and again, like, you want to do the weird things with the lineups. You want to give the dudes the day off, which I'm all right with days off. The lead's a mile.
Many of them.
But my focus and my priority is getting to the postseason 100% and then making sure they're not fatigued. Like, I'll tank a game in Oakland, to be honest with you. If it meant that I have all of my players healthy at 100% when the postseason comes around, and I know this isn't an exact science, I would take being swept in Oakland if it meant that I have 100% from every single one of my regulars at the end of the year.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but I just think that there's already been too much rest all year. I mean, ideally, if you play the way you've played throughout the season too, Oakland should be a rest series because you should already be, but you should still be taking care of your business. You're 6-5 against the A's this year. But I think that there are too many times that Dusty just continues to just say, we're going to rest and rest and rest these guys. I get it that they need to be rest for the playoffs. But because their division is so weak, there's not a ton of overly stressful situations for these guys. Obviously, you, when there's an injury like Yordan with his hand, you have to pay special attention to that. But other than that, I don't think that there are too many guys that are clamoring for these days off that are sitting there saying, I need, you know, one after another or one bellied up to a day off that's on the schedule anyway. They've done enough of that, and now we're starting to head down the stretch run. I just don't it annoys me that he continues to do it.
Yeah, I get it. And there's a lot of guys with a day off today. A lot of people are being very critical of the Dusty Baker lineup today, which I understand. You got Yuli Gurriel, who's been an offensive nightmare this season, batting second. And you have Aledmys Diaz protecting Yordan Alvarez because you got to have the lefty-righty thing. You got to have the lefty-righty thing if you're Dusty Baker. One other thing, too, though, like, okay, let's say that Dusty Baker is not going to give Yordan the protection that we think it should be. If it's an internal option, it'd be Kyle Tucker. Josh Bell fits in perfect because he's a switch hitter. So if it's trade, then you have some answers there. But if you're not going to do it, if you're not going to give Tucker, you know, the opportunity to hit right behind Yordan Alvarez, you're committed to the lefty-righty-lefty thing, which it seems like Dusty Baker, with the exception of like 3 weeks there when the offense was clicking and Kyle Tucker really heated up, which let's move him now because he's hot. You could go the lefty-righty-lefty with Yordan 2, Bregman 3, Tucker 4. So now you're getting the opportunity where Tucker's still going to bat in the first inning if Yordan gets on base, which isn't the case right now because there was a situation yesterday too. I think it was the first inning. Two up, two down. Yordan Alvarez is up with two outs. Nobody on base. Gets the base hit. Alex Bregman's up. If he's in the two hole, okay, base hit. Runner at first base, one out. Alex Bregman can buzzkill, pop up, two away. But at least Kyle Tucker's getting up in that spot. So there's ways to do it, even if we want to do the lefty-righty-lefty thing. But Dusty going to Dusty. You can do whatever you want, Dusty, but get Yordan Alvarez the protection. Most important thing for this Houston Astro team. What do you say, Beehive? What do you say, Houston? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Not Santa on Twitter wants us to keep the same energy on Luis Garcia compared to Jake Odorizzi. I want to tell you why Luis Garcia is not Jake Odorizzi. Jeez. Next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
White box with the blue star in the first aid section. Feel blue star work fast or your money back.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Our Twitch discussing Dusty Baker, Houston Astro manager. 713-780-ESPN, the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. It's not Santa's tweet, though. It kind of triggers me here a little bit. He added us.
Shocking that that's what he wants to get out of that.
At Blank, at Branham, at Brendan. DFA Garcia, all capital letters, 3 exclamation points. Hashtag keep that same energy. Difference between Luis Garcia and Jake Odorizzi?
He's not a D-bag.
He's not that.
Oh.
He's not that. That's also one other thing. Yep. That's not where I was going.
Okay.
He's also not a crybaby that demanded out of the game. Like, a lot of people were giving credit. I heard the Wheelhouse talking about this yesterday. Well, at least he went 5 innings. He demanded himself out of the game in the 6th inning when the Astros weren't ready to pull him. They just got up Phil Maton. It wasn't Dusty Baker that went out there to check on Odorizzi. Last time I checked, Dusty Baker's the one that makes the pitching change, not the law firm of Murphy and Miller. So Odorizzi, you can say, oh, he toughed it out and didn't get yanked in the 2nd when he was dealing with a little bit of the blister. The Astros wanted him to go through the 6th inning. There's a reason he came back out there. There's a reason Maton literally just got up. There's a reason that Dusty Baker didn't make that mound visit with the trainer originally. Jake Odorizzi asked out of that game.
He did, but again, I think he also used it as a crutch because selfishly, as we talked about yesterday, he was doing whatever he was going to do for his own best interest, and he was also trying to persevere the chance to stay relevant and stay in the rotation, and he knew that, you know, if this became an injury that he had to leave the game with, that then they could easily put him on the IL if they did that with the way the rest of the pitching staff has been pitching all year, that there might be a chance, especially with the deadline coming up, that it could really screw his chances for sticking around. So we highlighted all that yesterday. The bigger thing is you got a guy in Luis Garcia who is the most upbeat, best teammate on the planet. He is happy to be there every single day. He does everything they ask him to do. He doesn't put himself over the team at any time. And he just sits there and pitches his tail off more times than not. We've said it all season long. There are going to be bad games for all these pitchers that are going to come. Verlander had an 8 spot that he gave up in Seattle a few months back. It's going to happen to even the best pitchers in baseball. So the fact that he didn't have his best stuff last night, the fact that, you know, a tough infield single and then 2 walks and a grand slam and boom, all of a sudden, and then an extra base hit, and you're looking at it going, he doesn't have his best stuff tonight. But he's trying to tough it out too. He's trying to do whatever's necessary. But he did it completely different than the way Jake's handled himself ever since he's been an Astro. That's why I have a whole lot more compassion and sympathy for one bad outing from Garcia as opposed to what Jake does, continues to do, and the fact that he did it against the Oakland freaking A's.
The other thing, too, like Luis, he was never his best yesterday.
No.
Not a single point in that game, and he had trouble with his command the entire game. And he walked, what was it, 4 walks in that game and over 5 2/3. But he did strike out 7. Like, he still had some swing and miss. You could still see the stuff was there. And only had the one bad inning. Like, the 4 runs in the third, it's wasn't ideal. 2-out grand slam, 2-out RBIs always sting. But look, Luis Garcia was not good yesterday. But he was a pitch away from getting out of that third inning and not giving up a run to, yes, a bad Oakland A's offense. And it was a fluky inning, like you mentioned, the infield single, the first hit of the game. The back-to-back walks are what just, you know, those are the things that frustrate me more than the home run. Like, the other guy hits a home run, tip your cap. You're walking dudes, then, you know, you're playing with fire. And if you play with fire, you're eventually going to get burned. He wasn't his best yesterday, but he's not Jake Odorizzi asking out of game. He's a grinder, and he's going to compete.
I also think his stuff, his secondary stuff and everything, way better than Jake Odorizzi.
Yeah, he's got swing and miss. Yep. Odorizzi doesn't really have much swing and miss. And the secondary part of this, because like, I heard the Wheelhouse also talking about this yesterday at the beginning of their show. Like, you know, Odorizzi, like, he's going to be on this team, blah, 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 blah. I think you can trade him because what their point was, you know, he's your 6th man. It doesn't matter in the postseason because he's not even going to be in the rotation, maybe not even the playoff roster.
I don't think he's going to be on the roster.
Which, that's a fair point. Like, I'm not saying that it's a bad take, and it is a fair point. But whenever it's like comes down to like the August 2nd trade deadline, which is 6 days away, you also have another option, one down the pike, Lance McCullers, that's eventually going to be up on this team, 6-man rotation. But it's like, okay, well, you still have a gap to fill until McCullers is back. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but you got Hunter Brown, who's one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball, that would love to get those starts for Jake Odorizzi. One, he's probably better than Jake Odorizzi at the major league level at this point. 2, rookie deal. 3, you would love for him to get those starts to kind of see what he looks like against big league pitching if you don't trade him by August 2nd. And then also the difference between Luis Garcia, Jake Odorizzi, and if you want to throw Hunter Brown into this equation, Jake Odorizzi is potentially on the books next year for a minimum of $6.5 million and a maximum of $12.5 million. You have to have foresight, look at the forest, not the trees, and if there is a way to clear him off your books and potentially paying him up to $12.5 million next year, you have to do it.
Look, you look at the situation, you say Garcia's younger, you say he's better with his stuff and everything like that. That's one thing. But then when you talk about the situation we've also talked about in the past with Hunter Brown, you know that this kid is basically earmarked to be your future. And as early as next season, be a starting pitcher in your rotation. We want to see who's right and who's wrong. We want to see if Keith Law's right and he should be a bullpen guy, or Patrick Creighton and others are right and this guy's stuff is the best in AAA baseball, or some of the best in AAA baseball, and he should be pitching as a starter on the major league level. But you know what? You have such a big lead in the division that the only thing holding him back from being inserted into your rotation right now just to see what he can do is this crotchety old veteran that likes to bitch and moan every 2 days, 3 days about if he's not getting his way. And then he has the kind of outing that he has to basically want to encourage you to kick him to the curb or find a way to get him the hell out of here. And then because that's lingering about next year and it's his option, you'd love to make sure that that's out of the way too, because he's more of a distraction than he is an addition to your team every time he is on the major league roster. So you want to get all these things out of the way. But we said we want to see what Brown has. But Brown could possibly be gone too. Mm-hmm. If you look at some of the rumors that are out there right now that are heating up even more, it looks like one of the pitchers that is currently on the major league roster, one of the starting pitchers, could be involved in a deal if Click decides it does what it seems like he wants to do, which is make multiple deals to get multiple players that help this team. It's a surplus if one of those guys go, but then you have to replace them, and you got to believe Hunter Brown's in the mix. And like you said, McCullers, I'm not expecting him to come back, but if he does, then you have an extra guy that is capable of doing that. You have a surplus there. You have addition by subtraction because the guy's been a pain in the ass. It's night and day if you're trying to compare Garcia to Odorizzi.
Right. And as far as like Odorizzi being on this team past the deadline, like, will he probably be on this team? Sure. Does it matter that he's on this team? No, probably not, because he's not going to pitch in the playoffs. And, like, the idea, well, he's an innings eater. He can save the arms of – because that is his value. Like, to play devil's advocate, Jake Odorizzi's value to this team is that he is part of a six-man rotation. And if you're in a six-man rotation, you're saving the arm of Verlander. You're saving the arm of Fromber. You're saving the arm of all of the other younger guys. And then when McCullers comes back, you're saving the arm of Lance McCullers if he comes back. But, like, that's a two-week window. Like, Lance McCullers has to be on this roster by August 20th. We think he's going to make his first start on August 15th if there's not any setbacks. So, like, what is Jake Odorizzi doing in those 2 weeks between the August 2nd deadline and August 15th that makes him valuable? Like, his value is saving the arms of the pitchers, right? So that's probably two starts. That's two starts of Hunter Brown. If you do trade Hunter Brown, that's two starts of Brandon Belak. Like, I don't care if I see Brandon Belak for two starts over Jake Odorizzi if it guarantees myself to get $12.5 million potentially off my books next year whenever I have a 14-game lead in the division and I'm going to finish in the top two in the American League. I'll trade two starts for Jake Odorizzi to lock myself into $12.5 million of potential savings and even go with Brandon Belak for those two starts until McCullers comes back.
Hey, easy now. Now you're starting to ruffle my feathers.
Think about this. Brandon Belak makes two starts instead of Jake Odorizzi, and you take away $12.5 million on the books next year.
The financials is just something you can't, because of the fact that you also, again, I keep going back to it, but it's the biggest thing that you have to consider, which is your lead is so big, it's basically insurmountable in the division, that you can do things that a lot of teams can't. And so you can experiment with these kind of deals. And James Click, look, as much as he's an analytics guy, he's a bottom line guy. And Jim Crane, as much as he likes to spend when he's trying to add to his team to get him to a World Series, he's also all about saving other areas of the business if he can, and in other areas of the baseball team, so that when the time is right and when it is necessary to make a move, it's easier for him to okay it and to go ahead and do it. And so, therefore, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, I don't care if you do an opener, and there's ways to get through, you know, the other starts that instead of Jake Odorizzi. But I just think his time has passed. It's time to go. It's time to move on. I keep saying addition by subtraction because the more people I've talked to, whether he's a good teammate to the guys in the locker room or not, he doesn't handle his business like a professional. He doesn't handle Dusty. He doesn't handle James Click. He doesn't handle when he doesn't get the decision the way he wants it to go with when he's going to be activated and the things that they do. And so it's time for him to find a new destination, and it's time for the Astros to turn the page.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The Astros have dropped the first two in Oakland. The getaway day today, the series finale today. First pitch, 305 for the Houston Astros. The Astros are bored. I think it's very obvious that they get bored in these type of games, especially in Oakland. But is that okay? Is it okay for the Astros to get bored? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Excuse me. Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. Look, Apollo does things to get you feeling the way you used to feel again, and it's a great thing on a daily basis. You're not trying to win an Olympic gold medal. You're trying to win the day. In order to win the day, that means you got to, you know, you have all the energy for work, your family, workouts, honeydews, whatever the case may be. If you just feel like you just can't do it anymore, you need a nap, you're just running out of juice, there's a way you can get it back. You go to apollomh.com. Get in touch with the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Make an appointment. Find out all the ways they can help you, from getting on a workout program that starts with a full body composition analysis to recovering quicker after going to the gym with HGH peptide therapy. They can get you where you need to go. You want to get to a point where you want more energy? You can start with a B12 shot like I get. You can also move on to hormone therapy, where both men and women are reaping the benefits on a daily basis by finding out how they can get it and how much it can make a difference in your daily life. Check them out today, apollomh.com. Book that first appointment. You'll find out that most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot or free body comp analysis on your first official visit, and then let the process go from there. They're going to get you where you want to go. They're going to get you results. Just be honest when they ask you those tough questions and tell them where you want to get to. They're good people doing great things. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. All right, so the Astros have lost two in a row. I think they're bored. I think they get bored over the marathon of 162 games. You're coming out of the All-Star break. You play two high leverage games against the New York Yankees, which apparently the New York Yankees hadn't played a good team until yesterday when they lost to the Mets. But the Astros sweep that doubleheader. They go into Seattle where they're playing their biggest series in two decades. They're selling it out. They're going to say naughty things to Verlander. They're going to tell Kyle Tucker that he looks like a giraffe. All of these things. Listen, dog. And then the Astros swept them. So then you go to Oakland, which is a team that needs to move to Las Vegas, and they're doing whatever they can to leave that putrid stadium and that putrid city, and they get bored. They get bored that they have 350 people in the stands there. They get bored that they're playing the worst team in the American League West. But is it okay that the Astros are getting bored in these games?
I think it's natural. I don't know that it's okay. Again, you have a luxury of doing what you did, doing severe damage in the Yankees and the Seattle matchups to where you had even built yourself a bigger cushion. I think that there's a natural letdown to go from that level of competition and that level of excitement and overall atmosphere to, as you mentioned to Mike Stanton yesterday, less than 5,000 people in the stands, you know, basically an I don't care attitude across the board. A massive letdown is just natural when you get done playing in front of sellout crowds in Seattle and a jacked up juice box in a doubleheader against the Yankees and taking care of your business and doing it the way you did it, dominant. It's natural, but you would think that was just a one game thing. And because then it got so much run because the whole story and the narrative off of Major League Baseball after the first loss was the best teams in baseball lost to some of the worst teams in baseball. But now when you look at it, again, whether it's a built-in excuse or not, you can say, well, the Dodgers have lost two in a row, the Yankees have lost two in a row, and now the Astros have lost two in a row. So they didn't lose any ground trying to catch those teams or get to the best record in baseball. And again, you're playing a team that's so far out of it, they don't care and you don't either. And the fact that it's basically an irrelevant series coming off some of the most relevant series of the year, your guys are just kind of yawning and going, when do we get home? Let's just get home and we'll be fine. And we'll, you know, we'll click it back into gear and we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing all year. The luxury is the big lead you have in the division. Because if this was what the predicament you were in going into the All-Star break, ironically against the same team, the A's, when you lost two of three, there was a fear coming out that if you crap the bed coming out of the All-Star break, that you could actually have a division on your hands. So I think the mentality changed and they relaxed after they just absolutely dominated those five games. But you can't get too comfortable. I mean, you need to win this one. Look, and again, it's been a hell of a season. When you look at the 8 road trips that they've had this season, they've had a winning record if they win today in all 8. That is unheard of, the way they've done taking care of their business on the road. But you still have to, again, we're getting close to the playoff time where you got to ramp it back up and you got to focus on just, it doesn't matter who they have on the field, it's what you do on the field that's the most important thing.
Every time the Astros like fall into a lull, though, they seem to answer the bell, right? Like they haven't played a team above .500. They've played the fewest games against teams above .500 ahead of the 4-game series against the Yankees in the Bronx, ahead of the 9-game Gotham gauntlet. What do they do? They impress and they look like the best team in baseball. Okay, well, now you limp into the All-Star break. You're in a lull of the 162 games. You're coming out with a doubleheader when the All-Star break should still be going on, but because of the lockout, you got to play a doubleheader squeezed into the schedule right out of the break, and you sweep them. You sweep the Mariners. So, like, it doesn't change my opinion at all about the Astros. The Astros could lose today, first pitch, 3:05, wink, wink. It's not going to change my opinion of the Astros. I still think that they're very capable of winning
a World
Series.
Well, but you'd be concerned if they lost 3 in a row to one of the worst teams in baseball and the fact that that's a bad stretch of baseball.
It's a bad look, but it's not going to change my opinion of what I think of the Astros and their chances to win a World Series. Is it a bad stretch of baseball? Absolutely. Can't deny that. But does it change my opinion? Nope.
No, I'm not mine either in terms of the overall big picture, but I think it really ramps up the trade deadline. I think that people are going to be hyper-focused on, now you got to make a move. Now you got to do something right away. Now there's a little bit more concern, not panic, but there's a little bit more concern to do something to make sure that this doesn't continue and to make sure that you have the best chance to win and win in the playoffs. Otherwise, if they had kept rolling and they swept the A's and they had won 8 in a row coming back to Minute Maid, you might see a different attitude towards the trade deadline of this team is so good right now, rolling so hard. Maybe one move is necessary or a little tinker here or there, but maybe not as much as people were thinking previously.
I don't think so. Like maybe I'm wrong there. 713-780-ESPN. Let us know if it's opposite. If the Astros get swept today, Like, are you really concerned about the Astros? Does it change your opinion of the Astros? But is it okay for the Astros to be bored during the course of 162? 713-780-3776. Another question I have for the Hive and for you. Do you get bored? Because, like, 162 games is a long time. A nine-inning baseball game, which is the timeless sport. It's the beauty of baseball. They can drag on. They can be long. When they're playing in Oakland, when they're playing in Anaheim, they start at 9 o'clock. Oakland does this weird 8:40 start time. But they're playing on the brink of midnight, right? A lot of people have tough time staying up past midnight. I know I'm in that on
that
list.
Astros after dark.
Astros after dark. Like, it's easy to get up for the Yankees games, the Mariners games, whenever they're ready to get you. All the big-time opponents. We know who they are. But do you get bored over the course of 162?
I don't. I love the game, and I love the team. That I get up for every one of these games because I look forward to having the enjoyment of watching baseball in my evening. And yes, the late night games get a little bit more difficult. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, thank God for AT&T having breakfast and baseball in the morning where they replay the game. Because the minute that Garcia gave up the grand slam and an extra base hit, I went, click, tonight, and we'll check it out tomorrow morning. Because this one's not going to end well. And it gets frustrating because, you know, as I've told you guys in the past, I really expect this team to win every game, and I look forward to them being dominant in every game they play. When you have back-to-back games like that, it's disappointing to me. It's not that I'm concerned about the team long-term. It's just disappointing because, again, you're fighting more than just the opponent you're playing that night. As much as we go back and forth and ask national people about it, you're fighting the perception, you're fighting the past, you're fighting, you know, all the different news outlets and the way that they handle the Astros as opposed to other teams. And so you know that, at least I know, in my opinion, what part of what it makes it more difficult for me is I know that they're going to get bitch slapped somewhere in the media or a shot taken here or there because they slipped up against the A's and they'll lose sight of what they did the five games previous.
Does that get to you?
It does. It does. It honestly gets to me when, especially when there's that level of denial by all the national guys. Oh, we don't do that. Oh, it's not like that. But then when you read and Passan puts the asterisk in his columns and you read some of these guys and their little jabs and digs about, you know, people still worrying or remembering 2017 and the Astros never getting over the hump since, and little comments and jabs and things like that, it bothers me. Because from being able, from even the All-Star game, booing the guys, that's one thing. But looking at the roster and not being cognizant of the fact that you have basically a handful of players that are still left over from that team in 17, and not just giving them their props and their due for how good they are and have been over a five-year span, and the fact that I continue to say the only way you can completely validate the team and the organization is to win another one and to have been so close and not do it, it bothers me when these little slip-ups happen because I feel like it takes them down a notch in the eyes of the national media and people.
8998 says, it's not Brad Kellner. He says, I get bored of work 8 hours a day over 300 days a year. Why shouldn't they? I think that's natural. I think it's very easy to see that the Astros are bored. But is that okay? Not Brad Kellner is saying that it is. 713-780-3776.
Let's do it from your perspective. You're doing a U of H game. Let's say you are playing Gonzaga, and you are playing Gonzaga in a big arena on a national stage, and it's a massive game, and you're definitely more pumped up. And sure. Then you come home right after that, and let's say you play Tulane. It's a different vibe.
Well, I have too much respect for Ron Hunter.
I knew you were going to have. I couldn't pick anything. Maybe you're playing HBU on a Tuesday night.
But even more in baseball, though, because college basketball, you have 30. Like there's only so many opportunities to get a chance to watch a team that you love. Over 162, there are the ups and downs. There's going to Seattle, and then there's going to Oakland.
Well, even 82. When I worked in the NBA, I am not going to deny the fact that if we were on a road trip coming off a home game, going to Cleveland on a Monday night, on a back-to-back, the guy's energy level from the time the plane took off till the time you got on the plane in Cleveland to go back home, it would have been the exact same. It would have been rock bottom because everybody's like, it's cold as hell. You're in the mistake by the lake. You're not, you know, you get in at 3 a.m. and you're going to leave right after the game and you sleep all day to play a game against a team that you don't care and it's not even relevant to you. And then you go, we got to play a game tonight. Let's go. Yay, team. It's natural. It happens.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Rob, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking my call. I'm not real worried about this little two-game slip-up. If you remember last year, I think the Astros lost 5 of 6 to Detroit, and that team was way worse than this Oakland team. At least you're you're getting shut down by Frankie Montas, who's you know, a very solid pitcher. It happens. It's part of 162. I'm almost a little bit happy at the timing because, like you guys said, it highlights the deficiencies in center field and first base, and maybe it does push Click to go ahead and throw that extra prospect out there to get the player that we really need.
Yeah, I heard Click on the with cardiac arrest, and he was talking about how, like, two games, like, whatever. Like, basically, he, like, didn't want to dismiss it, but he was like, look, whatever. Like, it's about the body of work. I don't think that what has happened in the last two games is going to affect Click's decision-making at all
ahead of
the trade deadline.
I
feel he's going to be aggressive, right?
The way I positioned it was Click's going to do whatever he does. It isn't about Click. It's about how the fan base is going to react. It's going to be the sense of urgency. It's not going to be panic. This team may absolutely tank between now and the playoffs. No, it's a heightened sense of do something now at the deadline, because now instead of that kind of that quiet confidence that's been building with every win about this team may be the best team in baseball and kind of nose in the air, you know, shaking your tail a little bit going, yeah, that's us. We bad. And all of a sudden you're like, from a fan base perspective, hey, James, Click. What are you going to do now? We need a little help. Where are you going to get us an extra bat? What are you going to do to enhance the pen? What's going on, and when are you going to fix it? Because we're going to need our best chance to win it all. And we don't like this where we're hovering right there with the Mets and the Dodgers and the Yankees. We'd like to know we are in the driver's seat going forward. And I think that's where I think if you had won all three of these games in Oakland or two of the three games in Oakland, you'd be like, you know what? There's not that sense of urgency that we have to do something.
I think the mindset would have been the same. Like, I don't think that sweeping.
There's a good level, of course, for the fan base, though. That I'm saying, from a fan base perspective.
Yeah, not from a Click perspective.
No, not from a Click perspective.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's very obvious that the Astros are bored. Is that okay? And do you get bored over the course of 162? When you go against the A's and there's 300 people there and it's a 9 o'clock game and a midweek and you have to be to work the next day, do you get bored? Also, what is the best month on the calendar year? Or the best month on the calendar? Is it January? Is it November? You tell us. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
2198, love MLB. 162 is fine. October's even better. We're asking you the question, do you get bored over the course of 162? You know, Astros and Oakland doesn't move the needle a ton. I love baseball. I'm a baseball nerd. We all know this. So, like, I draw excitement of whatever game it is, whatever the game is, and I love the management of how you handle 162. So, I draw entertainment from it, but I can realize that playing at Oakland is not the same as hosting the Yankees.
No, it's just part of sports, especially professional sports, but all sports, that there are going to be, just like teams go through ebbs and flows no matter who they're playing, and whether it's injury-related or just, you know, the long, drawn-out season-related, but at the same time, the schedule matters. And the same way it's more prevalent in the NFL when there's only 17 games, and the minute the schedule comes out, guys in the locker room are circling key games and matchups and your ex-teams and all and the divisional matchups. In baseball and basketball, it's also similar. You're looking for your longest road trips. You're looking for the times that you're going to play, you know, your only times of the year you're going to play the Yankees, or if you're going to play the Dodgers, or, you know, the times that you're going to play the big games against the teams that are going to matter in October. Those are the ones you circle. But you also know, based on how this division has been, that within a first month of the season, you're going to take two of those three teams or the two of the three teams you play in the division and go, yep, those are easy wins. Those are teams that, because look, a year ago, and which has been prevalent for the Astros for multiple years now, as the one caller mentioned, you got manhandled by the Orioles. You got swept by the Tigers in a series and beaten by them. And their record against teams below 500 was absolute dog snot. It's just sometimes with the makeup of some teams. And look, a lot of it has to do with what's inside the locker room. Sometimes you get those veterans that are just like, nope, every single day I don't care what you've been through until you cross those lines. Once you cross those lines, we're all about that life and that win, dog. But there's also going to be those guys and the veterans that say, save yourself for October. We're coasting right now. We're, you know, we're up by 10 games in the division. No need to get all fired up for a game against Oakland.
Yeah, I mean, Dusty thinks that way. Let's be honest. 6-9-5-5, the Astros have been beating up on good teams and losing frustrating games against bad teams for the last 5 years. However, I think this year is more critical than past for us to have home field advantage in the ALCS. Home field advantage will be great. I'm not going to play Jose Altuve every single game the rest of the way trying to beat myself up to get that home field advantage. Like, it's one of those, does it matter? Yes. Is it the focal point? I want to get to the postseason 100%. I think if you go into the Bronx, you're gonna win half of those games that you're playing in the Bronx. You take care of home field, you win anyways.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think a lot, and I made the statement a while back, you're not worried about your division anymore. Your division just became the American League. And when I made the statement, you were six back of the Yankees. Now, suddenly, because of the change in fortune that came right out of the All-Star break and going into it, with the exception of the A's series, with the way you've been playing, now, all of a sudden, you're right on the bumper of the Yankees. And you're right in the discussion on a nightly basis for best record in baseball. So a lot of people are hyper-focused on that. What it comes down to is, where is your team and how do they play both home and road? As much as you know there are going to be environments where there is a legit home field advantage, Brandon, I hate to admit that. But you also look at it and you say, hey, look, we have one of the best, until this hiccup in Oakland, they had the best record in baseball on the road in Major League Baseball for this season. So you know they don't have an issue playing on the road. It's a different animal in the playoffs when there's a full house and the crowd's all jacked up and it means more. But yet, you look at what this team has done, especially when we say the dog days of 162 games, some of those 3-city, 9-10 game road trips, they get grueling to where you just kind of start mailing it in. The fact that they've won every one of those road trips, you tip your cap and go, this team's a little different. So you don't have to worry about them as much as you might have to a younger team that's set into a hostile environment might have a little bit more anxiety and tense up a little bit.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What is the best month on the calendar?
I mean, we're both born in June. June has to be it.
It's not June for me. It's not June for me. Because, well, I mean, June you have NBA Finals, you have some of it, right? You still have some NBA Finals. You have baseball, but it's dog days. Like, sports obviously is very big and, like, my favorite month. But also, like, weather's a factor. Like, it's 100 stinking degrees every day in June. Like, I can't get out. I can't golf. I don't want to do anything outside. So, it's not very high on my list, if I'm being honest. It's great that it's our birthday month. Mm-hmm. For me, March is pretty good for me because I love March Madness.
It's close because March Madness now rolls into April a little bit, but the Masters is in April,
mm-hmm.
And baseball's going.
It's about to get started.
Yeah.
Like, spring training's back. You have Hope Springs Eternal and all of that.
Right there in the change from March into early April is probably that best period of time for sports.
Joel's favorite month is the last 2 weeks of March and the first 2 weeks of
April.
Can
I do that? Do I have to do it by a calendar? Can I just do it by 4 weeks right there?
No. The question is what month? you can't rearrange
the
month.
I'll tell you what, though. If you could, I think Joel wins.
Yeah. Well,
true.
I just created a month. It's called Marpril.
Blank month. 713-780-ESPN. I lost on the Twitch where who said this? I think it was Shady that said this. The best month of the year is the month where you get three paychecks in that month. I've never been in a job that pays every other week. I've always been first of the month, 15th of the month, or like contract work. So I've never really got to enjoy that.
Yeah, I have, but I don't think I paid attention like that, but I can totally understand it. And it was a good answer from that perspective. I'm always thinking about it just from the perspective of, like, the worst to me would be the period we just got out of in July.
Yeah.
The fact that it's hot as you know what outside. The fact that, you know, baseball goes through the All-Star break. The British Open or the Open Championship is early in the morning, and you can't even watch golf if you want.
I like the early morning major championship.
I lose sight of it with kids. It's more difficult. It's a lot more difficult than it was when you were single and just rolled over and hit the remote.
I feel like it'd be more difficult if you're single.
Mm-mm.
Like, if you're single, you're probably just not going to sleep and watching it.
And it's there.
Yeah, that's another way
to go.
6-9-5-5, October is the best month. See, here's the thing. Like, it's either March for me or somewhere in the fall. Because, like, even, like, November, you start to get some basketball, some college basketball. You're probably just past baseball, so maybe October is the answer here. But football is very much a thing. So it's hard to pick a month where there's not football. So he says October is the best month. Playoff baseball, conference NCAA football, NFL football, weather cools down, hunting begins. And you can start to look forward to the holidays.
And the NBA gets going, too. Not that that's relevant anymore. But, yeah, you've got everything pretty much cooking at that point.
Yeah.
And a matter of fact, depending on when you do it, the Tour Championship and the end of the golf season, and there's a lot going on in October.
October's my answer.
Playoffs, too.
You get pretty good sports. Yeah. You get pretty good weather. I don't know if you have elite anything in October, but you have pretty good
baseball
on a lot of things. Yeah, I guess you get playoff baseball. You also, if you care for it, and some people don't, I think Halloween's a cool holiday. You get to throw Halloween in the mix. For me, it's October and April are the two I debate because you don't have football, but you have the NFL draft, which I care about.
Draft over March Madness?
Man.
Now, see, the final four is in April, so you could kind of scoreboard.
That's what I was saying,
because
it rolls over into early April when the Masters and the Final Four.
But the best part of March Madness is the early week, so you do lose the best part of it. But you get some of college basketball. You get the start of baseball season. You get the NFL draft. It's not like standalone the NFL draft I don't pick over March Madness, but the month of April, if you offer me the start of baseball and the NFL draft in exchange for March Madness, I would take it.
The start of the baseball season is critical, too, if you're an American League West fan that's not the Houston Astros.
Because you're relevant for about 2 weeks.
Let's face it. Lowen says October is the best month. Love the show. 3008, best month of the year, September. It's like the start of general public fiscal year. Quarter one, I guess. Football, school starting, playoff baseball build-up, hunting season closing in, hopefully cooling off. Also, it's my birthday and anniversary. I work 4 days a week, 10 hours a day, and get paid every week. That's just a little flex there. Thanks for flexing. Uh-huh. 3008, best month of the year is September. Oh, you already read that one. He texted twice.
I think when we do this, though, the big factor is because football is so awesome. But when you get relevant college football and regular season NFL football, that is huge. Because now your Saturday's occupied, your Sunday's occupied, your Sunday night and your Monday night are occupied. And if you can throw in there that you've got baseball starting up and some other things, that's pretty solid.
What's the worst month?
I'm telling you, July might be close.
July's up there. I think August is up there too. Because I know
preseason football.
I know that. Yeah. And I know, but preseason football is a little bigger for you than it is most.
Oh,
now August you do have there are some football games. There are camp battles. Like you're doing the fantasy football draft, so it's like August is where you're kickstarting.
Drafts year
even
round.
In July, but I mean for most fantasy football drafts take place heavily in August, so you're kickstarting the football season in August. I think where you are on the map matters. We're talking to the city of Houston, so it's 100 degrees every day. So when it's 100 degrees every day, August and July I think are the slowest sports months. I probably lean July more than August just because you don't have the start of football season, and now August 2nd is the new Major League Baseball trade deadline, at least this year. So trade deadline's not even in July anymore.
I think the answer is July. I think that we know that there's that lull period for doing what we do radio-wise, because it's just you have to be so focused and creative because there's literally nothing going on for about 10 days. And it sucks. And so I think it's the anti-October. I think July is the anti-October.
Yeah, I think it's July. I'm going to lean July there. Give me either March or October for best month.
I would go July on worst month, but if it wasn't for the NBA Finals, I think June would enter the discussion.
Yeah, birthday month, though. Birthday month matters. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Speaking of camp, Houston Texans training camp 2 days away. First practice is on Friday. The vets reported yesterday. Rookies reported on Sunday. So we've been counting down every day at 1 o'clock the top 2022 storylines for the Houston Texans as we approach training camp. Today, number 3, and it revolves around Texans head coach Lovie Smith. One thing you could say about Lovie is he's never been a problem with the bosses, right? You don't have to worry about HR&P or human resources and payroll with Lovie Smith because Lovie's a heck of a guy. You also don't have to worry about HR&P, human resources, and payroll because they're fantastic. And as you know, they're Cougar owned by Mike Holley. Members of the Cougar 100, 8th year in a row. You've seen the signage at the U of H games. You've seen the building off the Beltway, and you've seen that U of H flag outside of that building off the Beltway. And business owners, let HR&P help you. HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. HR&P can help in any or all of those areas. One of the best things about HR&P, there's no boxes with HR&P. Doesn't matter how small, doesn't matter how big, doesn't matter how medium. HR&P will completely customize a plan for what you and your business needs. Problem or an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, HR&P will find a way to help. It'll discover a way to help you out. And they do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. Best Tech, you'll love that, but you'll also love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll be talking to some stranger on a call board. You'll be talking to someone who knows you and you know they know your business needs. Also, look, if you're an employer and you're trying to help out your employees too, employees will love HR&P. I can speak to that whenever I have the questions. I'm an email kind of guy. I don't like always calling. The email works better for me. It's always a quick response, and it's always very helpful. So it's customer support that your employees will love. Give them a call, 281-880-6525, and let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.